She's our next guest. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to South Carolina, where President Biden delivered his second campaign speech of the year at the historic Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, where in 2015, eight black parishioners and their pastor were shot dead by a white supremacist. Biden remembered the victims.
On June 17, 2015, the beautiful souls, five survivors, invited a stranger into this church to pray with them. The word of God was pierced by bullets and hate, of rage, propelled by not just gunpowder, but by a poison. Poison has for too long haunted this nation. What is that poison? White supremacy. Oh, it is. It's a poison. Throughout our history, it's ripped this nation apart. It has no place in America. Not today, tomorrow, or ever.
As he spoke, Biden was disrupted by activists demanding a Gaza ceasefire.
Without light, there's no path from this darkness.
As the protesters were removed from the church, supporters of President Biden began chanting four more years. He addressed the protesters.
I understand their passion, and I've been quietly working with the Israeli government to get them to reduce and significantly get out of Gaza. I'm using all that I can to do.
Without naming Donald Trump, Biden blasted the former president and leading 2024 Republican candidate as a loser who tried to overthrow the 2020 election results by urging his supporters to storm the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. A number carried Confederate flags and wore white supremacists and far-right symbols. Following the massacre at the Emanuel AME Church in 2015, following the mass funeral at the University of Charleston Arena that thousands came out for, our next guest, Bree Newsom Bass, scaled the 30-foot flagpole at the South Carolina State Capitol and removed the Confederate flag. As police officers shouted at her to come down, she shimmied to the top of the flagpole, took the flag in her hand and said, "You come against me with hatred. I come against you in the name of God. This flag comes down today."
You come against me with hatred and oppression and violence. I come against you in the name of God. This flag comes down today.
While Bree Newsom was arrested along with an ally, it was only after this action that the Confederate flag was formally removed from the South Carolina Statehouse grounds. Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley was governor of South Carolina at the time. She has faced fresh backlash after she didn't mention slavery when asked about the cause of the U.S. Civil War during a recent town hall in New Hampshire. Well, for more, we're joined in Raleigh, North Carolina, by Bree Newsom Bass, artist, anti-racist activist. Bree, welcome back to Democracy Now! This certainly does take us back. As people debate whether it was Nikki Haley who ultimately forced the flag to come down, we're going to the woman who actually took it down and risked your freedom to do it. Talk about why you did that then. Ultimately, the legislature would vote to take it down, and how you feel about what's happening today.
Yes, and thank you again so much for having me on. I want to make it clear, yes, I did scale the pole and take the Confederate flag down. This was an issue that people had been protesting for years and years and years. And that's part of what made it so egregious in 2015 when we had the massacre at Emanuel AME and South Carolina refused to lower the flag, because part of the reason why they were refusing to lower the flag is that they had passed a law in the year 2000 saying that it couldn't be lowered for any reason after they moved it from the Capitol Dome to the flagpole on the lawn where it was at the time that I took it down. So this had been going on for years and years and years. And Nikki Haley actually opposed taking the flag down right up until those massacres occurred and the mounting political protest and the, you know, the pressure made it where she basically had to, at that point, support the flag coming down. So ideologically, she has never really had this stance of being opposed to either the Confederacy or, symbols of the Confederacy, and certainly not opposed to racist policy. She went right from the governorship to serving in the Trump administration. And she's had a number of incidents over the years where the things that she says or the things that she does directly contradict with her, you know, her claim of having led the way on taking the Confederate flag down. At one of her recent rallies, she played that song, Find Out in a Small Town, you know, the song that people really raised a lot of concern about because it was obviously alluding to sundown towns and the racial violence that Black people have experienced here for decades and decades and decades. So this is not new for Nikki Haley. It just shows that she does not really represent anti-racism in any real way.
And Bree, I'd like to ask you, in response to President Biden's speech, you posted on social media, quote, how the Black church is used as a prop for white politicians actually proves the point that racism is alive and well and strong. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think that the whole way that the incidents in 2015, both the massacre at Emmanuel AME, the refocus on the Confederate flag there in South Carolina, the formal ceremony around taking the flag down, and the way that American politics returns to those moments again and again and again, speaks to how relevant it still is. The fact that Black churches are frequently used as, political campaign stops for politicians. In this case with Joe Biden, he is clearly trying to make an appeal, not just to Black voters, but really trying to fend off criticism that he is racist, that he is sponsoring a genocide. And that criticism is completely well-founded because he is sponsoring a genocide. And genocide is the most extreme form of racial violence that there is. And so to use the pulpit at Emmanuel AME in this manner to make it a prop essentially for Joe Biden's re-election bid, to me, is the greatest assault on truth. I know Joe Biden stood there in the pulpit and said that there is an assault on truth that's happening right now. Joe Biden is in many ways leading that assault. And I know that he's running against Donald Trump, who we know is also a serial liar. But Donald Trump is not the one who is currently in office right now. It is Joe Biden. And this effort to use the church, not just the Black church, but the site of racial violence, of a mass murder, to deflect from the fact that Joe Biden himself is bombing churches, bombing mosques, bombing places of worship, and murdering many civilians, people who have sought shelter in those places. It just exposes the complete hypocrisy of this entire situation and the vacuum of moral leadership at the top. And that's why I took offense to it. I think that's why many people who watched it took offense to it. I'm very glad that the young people stood up and protested, because even though they were few in that audience, they represented the majority of people worldwide.
It's interesting, Bree. The polls that have just come out today indicate that Nikki Haley is surging in the polls in New Hampshire. You referenced where she stood on the Confederate flag. I wanted to go back to 2014, when then South Carolina Republican Governor Nikki Haley suggested South Carolina had resolved its image problem and that having the Confederate flag at the State House was fine, because not a single CEO had complained. She was speaking at a gubernatorial debate.
You know, the Confederate flag is a very sensitive issue. And what I can tell you is, over the last 3.5 years, I spend a lot of my days on the phones with CEOs and recruiting jobs to this state. I can honestly say I have not had one conversation with a single CEO about the Confederate flag. What is important here is that we look at the fact that, yes, perception of South Carolina matters. That's why we have everybody answering the phones. It's a great day in South Carolina. That's why we're being named the friendliest state and the most patriotic state and getting all these great accolades. But we really kind of fixed all that when you elected the first Indian American female governor, when we appointed the first African American U.S. senator.
That was Nikki Haley back in 2014. Bree Newsom-Bass, your final comment.
I mean, I think that says it all, right? So, first of all, she's saying that it's okay. The optics are okay, right? We're not talking about the substance. We're not talking about the experience. We're not talking about whether people are actually experiencing equal treatment under the law. Just the optics. So the optics are fine because it's not disrupting business, right? And then the other thing that she offers as evidence that everything is okay is the fact that she's non-white. She is an Indian American woman, and she points to other people in the administration, excuse me, who are non-white. Well, that's the entire problem right there. The idea is that so long as we can keep business going as usual, it doesn't matter that there's violence. It doesn't matter that there's racism. All that matters is the optics. And that is what Nikki Haley's campaign represents in her falsely claiming that she led the way on taking the Confederate flag down. That's what Joe Biden's campaign represents in terms of thinking that all that matters is giving a speech at a church and ignoring all of the churches that are being blown up and all of the Palestinians that are being killed, ignore the fact that young people are demanding a future, and we have people who are older who don't seem to care at all that this assault in Palestine is disproportionately affecting children or killing children. And then in the case of Nikki Haley, again, she does not truly represent any of the things that she is claiming when it comes to being anti-racist. You can say whatever words you want to say. You can put together whatever kind of events you want to put together. But the fact is that the truth is going to be the truth. We see what is actually happening. And I support all of the disruptions because the last thing that we need is to carry on business as usual when our democracy is absolutely under attack. Democracy is under attack worldwide. And genocide is the most extreme form of racial violence that there is. So there's no way that we are fighting white supremacy simply by taking down a flag or having an event at Emmanuel AME in the midst of genocide, in the midst of doing away with affirmative action, voting rights, the attack on abortion rights. This is where we are at. It's a very dangerous place. And I hope that people look beyond the optics and support those people who are disrupting, because the last thing that we need is to carry on with business as usual.
Bree Newsom-Bass, artist, anti-racist activist. In 2015, following the massacre of the 8 African-American parishioners and their pastor by a white supremacist at the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, Bree scaled the 30-foot flagpole at the South Carolina State Capitol and removed the Confederate flag. Next up, we go to the growing support for reparations in America. Stay with us. Today is the day by the Palestinian lo-fi duo Hazy Noir. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We look now at the growing movement in support of reparations in the United States for Black descendants of people who were enslaved. The state of New York recently joined California to establish a commission to study reparations and racial justice. More work's being done at the local and personal level, which is the focus of a new documentary premiering this week on PBS, The Cost of Enslavement. Inheritance, an America Reframed special. This is the trailer.
Cornelius, age 8.
A discovery brings strangers together.
Seeing those names,
John,
it humanized it for me.
Every time I say I'm the fifth generation of Zeke Quarterman, an enslaved man, part of me dies.
On a journey across the years.
Field article number 15, 40 acres, a mule, and $200. Abraham Lincoln is assassinated. The enslaved got nothing.
Congress passes the Homestead Act, Social Security, the GI Bill, the FHA.
Now, when we come to Washington, we're coming to get our check.
Mom, I love you. I can't breathe.
Connected by a common cause.
Harm happens locally, so repair has to happen locally. Do the work. Look at your own history. What was your family's role?
Seeking justice and peace.
For more, we're joined by some of the people featured in The Cost of Inheritance. In Savannah, Georgia, Randy Quarterman is a fifth-generation descendant of Zeke Quarterman, who was enslaved by George Adam Keller. Randy co-founded the Reparation Project alongside Sarah Eisner, a fifth-generation descendant of Keller. In Denver, Lottie Lee Abdullah is with us, a descendant of William Hayes Paxton, who was an enslaver in the Mississippi Delta. She's with Reparations for Slavery. And in New York, we're joined by Yoruba Richin, the award-winning director of this documentary. Yoruba, before we play some clips, yes, let's start with you. Talk about this movement for reparations that's hardly hitting the corporate media radar, but is happening all over the country, both at state level, city level, and personally, like the ones you document in this film.
Absolutely. Good morning, Amy. Thank you for having us. It's pretty incredible the pace in which we see reparations moving. Everything from studying state commissions, like the one New York just passed. We're actually now the third state. Illinois has one as well. To cities all across the country who are looking into how to move forward on reparations for descendants of enslaved folks, and these personal stories. You know, as we were making this film over the past 3 years, we could hardly keep up with all of the different things we were hearing about, and even since the film has been completed. So it's a far cry from where we have come. I mean, I remember, you know, growing up in the 80s, you talk about reparations, you were considered a fringe. You were considered, you know, a crazy person. So, you know, this movement has been ongoing, as the film shows, since the end of slavery. Black people have been fighting for reparations, and it continues to be a long struggle. But what we show in The Cost of Inheritance is that there is that it's actually happening, and it's happening on a personal level. And on these local levels, which will hopefully give rise to and more momentum for it to happen on a federal level.
Randy Quarterman, your family is linked to Sarah Eisner's family through slavery. You're a fifth generation descendant of someone who was enslaved by George Adam Keller. After she contacted you, you founded the Reparations Project to save the Quartermans' family lands in Monteith and Port Wentworth, Georgia, after it faced various legal challenges. Could you talk about the relationship you formed with Sarah?
Yes, good morning. The relationship I formed with Sarah was an opening one for me. Being born in Japan and raised in Japan until I was 13, and then coming here not knowing anything about my Black history or anything like that, to learn about our heirs property and an acre of it being taken by eminent domain, and also learning about the 90% of land, Black land loss that happened in the South itself. So Sarah opened that door for me to really engage and really understand the history of my African-American people, my Black people, and also understanding the dynamics of my own family.
You know, I want to go to a clip from The Cost of Inheritance that features you, Randy, as well as the woman who contacted you, Sarah Eisner.
In 2019, I was speaking with my cousin Bill, who lives in the Savannah area. Bill said, the Quarterman family still own this plot of 10 acres of land that George Adam Keller gave Zeke Quarterman in the 1800s.
When we found out the land was given to Zeke, he came alive again to us.
You got anything on your heart, right? Now? This is the time, hallelujah.
August 2019, now I had an email from Sarah acknowledging who her family was and if I was a descendant of Zeke Quarterman, who was enslaved by George Adam Keller. I was just, like, taken off track a little bit.
I was definitely nervous and scared.
My question was, what are they doing here? What's going on?
I remember thinking, what have I done? What if they yell at me? If they do, they do. They have every right to be angry.
I consulted with Pat Gunn, somebody that was doing this type of work and understanding it.
And so you're standing in a sacred ground. This is a slaveholding bin, we believe.
She told me, said, hey, you know, your ancestors is on your back. It's a special moment for you. You need to engage.
See, like one,
yeah.
Two, three, four. And it's staggered into a corner. It's like where a house would be right here. For me and my family, we know this as heirs' property.
Land that's passed down through family generations that has no will to say this person owns the land.
It should have been Zeke's house. This probably was the house structure that was they lived at.
But the land is not in our possession. In court appointed, a lawyer became the executor of our property.
See, it's like old bricks from back then.
And then Sarah was like, hey, I really want to get you some help to try to clear this title.
I thought, this is so obviously a case of reparations because of America's first attempt at reparations right in that area.
And I want to go to another clip from The Cost of Inheritance that features our other guest, Lottie Lieb Dula.
I've looked at my own family history, and I've documented three different governors that were likely involved in creating the laws of slavery. When I found out that Brianna had studied political science, that whole area, I thought, well, that matches the harm that I need to unwind.
For white people, one of the most important things to know is this is not a gift. I am repaying a debt.
I started working with Lottie. I've learned things about my grandmother. I've learned a lot about my great-grandparents, down to the personality traits and even some of the ways I stand when I take pictures. It is very creepy to see someone, you know, who's born in the 1870s have the same pose when she took pictures.
Bree and I teach a class in reparative genealogy. We really cater to white people who have a family background of enslavement, and we give you an idea of what steps you would take to begin to do repair work. One of the first steps, understand the genesis of the racial wealth gap.
You've got black people today in America that own about 2% of U.S. wealth. After all of this time, about 2%. How did we get here?
The history of my family really shows exactly how it works mechanically.
It all started with Elisha Paxton, my third great grandfather. He established a plantation near Lexington, Virginia, beginning around 1815.
And with the proceeds, likely from the plantation operations, he was able to send many sons to law school, including my second great grandfather. So right there, you have the benefit of education.
In the early 1830s, several of Elisha's sons, including my second great-grandfather, moved to the Mississippi Delta. There they set up a law practice and later multiple cotton plantations.
Cotton became king.
Cotton drove the creation of the Wall Street banks and made really the economy of the United States. But where did it put African Americans?
If you go back to 1860, we know there's about 4 million black people held in bondage. Those people are the most liquid asset in the country. $22 trillion in today's value, in terms of the value of those folks to the country. It's an enormous impact. So the first is what was extracted from those people during that period of time. The second is what was extracted from those people following that time during the Jim Crow era.
That is a clip of The Cost of Inheritance that's premiering on PBS this week. Lottie Lieb Dula is with us, descendant of William Hayes Paxton, who was an enslaver in the Mississippi Delta, with reparations for slavery, a portal for white families walking the path of direct repair. If you can talk about your relationship with Bree Cuffey, who we see in this film, a young black woman, when she talks about reparations for her as repaying student debt. How'd you hook up?
Thank you, Amy, and it's a real honor to be here with you today. In early 2018, as you'll see in the documentary, I found some boxes, and within those boxes I found records of my family's records of enslavement on a plantation in Mississippi. And within about 24 hours, I had decided I was going to have to go on a journey of repair. And one of the first things I did, looking around to figure out where do I go? I've got to talk to somebody about this history and decide what to do. I discovered a group called Coming to the Table, and they were having a national gathering that summer. And at that national gathering, they were going to be discussing reparations. So I attended, and I noticed immediately, I think the youngest person at this gathering, that was Brianna Cuffey, and we both ended up attending the reparations session. And I made a bunch of pretty arrogant statements saying how I wanted essentially to change the world and build a portal, and I wanted to know who would partner with me, and there were crickets. And I sort of wandered off a bit dejectedly, and Bree walked up to me and rolled up on me. And she just said, you have some pretty mighty ideas there, but you haven't thought about people like me. You're setting up scholarships. You're recommending this and that. What about me? I have a six-figure college debt. I'm working three jobs. I'm barely making it. What do you have for me? And so in that moment, I realized not only was this the perfect partner for the portal, but that a path was opening up right in front of my eyes as to a beginning step I could take to engage in direct repair. So that's how we met. And as you'll see in the film, our relationship unfolds.
Well, Lottie, we only have about a minute, but I'm wondering your response. It's gotten a lot of attention, the Nikki Haley's response as a GOP presidential candidate to the causes of the Civil War.
Oh, I'm disgusted by that comment. Of course, we know the cause of the Civil War, it's slavery. In fact, I have in my ancestors' memoir, there's a direct quote, and he says, I don't know what anybody else is calling this war, but I call it the war for the slaves. So it just goes to show that we are so far apart in how we are looking at our history. We really need to come together, and that's really what we recommend and how our portal works, is we take a very, very fine look at history, and we bring black and white people together to engage in reparative genealogy and looking at our history together and forming bonds of repair.
Lottie Lieb Dula, I want to thank you for being with us. Descendant of an enslaver in the Mississippi Delta with reparations for slavery, Randy Cauterman, fifth generation descendant of Zeke Cauterman, enslaved by George Adam Keller. Randy co-founded the Reparation Project along with Sarah Eisner. And we want to thank Yoruba Richin, the director of The Cost of Inheritance, an America Reframed special. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
PFLAG Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Every day, PFLAG Canada volunteers are contacted by frightened kids and by angry, fearful, or ashamed parents. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.
Broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.